You're listening to the Strongpreneur Nation podcast with your host, Tom Reber.
My guest today is Greg Wittstock. He is the founder, CEO, chief content guy, whatever the heck you're calling yourself these days.
That would be the pond guy.
The pond guy. There you go. And Greg has a little company outside of Chicago called Aquascape, and it's the king of the water gardening industry in North America, the water garden capital of the world in St. Charles. And Greg, like we just said, we've known each other a long time. We played high school football together, goofed off a little bit through the years. And I thought, Greg, you would be a great guest to have to just shoot the bull about being a strongpreneur, man. So thanks for hanging out with me today.
Hey, appreciate it. It's going to be fun. What's up?
So tell us a little bit about your story for those of you that people that aren't listening. You know, what do you do? How'd you get there? Let's hear it.
Well, like I said, people know me as the pond guy, which is a moniker that I earned from right when I got into the business, which is water gardening. So I love to ask people on airplanes when they say, what do you do? And I say water gardening. Most people have don't have an accurate perception of what water gardening is. They think it's something to do with, you know, irrigating landscaping or fountains. But water gardening, but I usually say, nah, it's like Mr. Miyagi's backyard from The Karate Kid, and koi fish, waterfalls, water lilies, and almost everybody has an Uncle Joe that has or had a water garden, and they all pretty much say the same thing. Aren't those a lot of work? And of course, that means it's going to be a very long flight for them, because I can talk about my passion, and that is water gardening. And how I got my start in this was back right around when I met you, 1982. My dad said, came home one day. We were living in southern Jersey, outside of the New Jersey Pine Barrens, and said we were moving to the flat, barren cornfields of Wheaton, Illinois. And I was not very excited about leaving my lakefront home and my adventures in a Huckleberry Finn life of catching turtles, fish, and frogs. But my parents promised me I could bring 11 pet turtles with me. And we drove 16 hours with them sloshing around in the bottom drawer from the refrigerator that I put a couple inches of water in. And the second day I was living in Wheaton, I went in the backyard and started building my own pond to house those turtles. And back in the early 80s, it was, of course, a time before the internet. How anybody found out anything about anything was to go to the library and get books. And all of the books that I found at the local library were written in European water gardening or Japanese koi keeping. And they pretty much all said to make your pond to make it out of concrete. So that first pond I built was out of concrete. And it leaked, turned green, and even my prized turtles migrated away. And that was the beginning of my odyssey with the water gardening hobby. But I wasn't undaunted. And every single year for the next 7 years, I ripped out and rebuilt my backyard pond. 2 years in a row, I tried to get the concrete to hold. That didn't work, so I put a rubber liner down. My pumps were getting clogged, so I used a garbage can to alongside of it as the skimmer. And the filters were inadequate. They were made for aquariums, not ponds. And so I ended up making my own out of a Rubbermaid cattle trough. And so about 1990, neighbors and friends started to really take notice and say how much they loved the pond. And then one day in 1990, I was actually working in my pond when a UPS guy rang a doorbell and I yelled for him to come around the back. And he walked around the back and I was in my pond working on it like I did as a hobbyist all the time. And he said, "This is beautiful. How did you ever buy a house with a natural spring on it?" Which is the ultimate compliment, by the way, to a contractor. He thought that the pond was always there. And I thought right then and there, there's got to be a business here. And I remember telling my mom and my dad that I wanted to start a pond building business. I told my mom first because I knew she would just think she would support me no matter what I did. And I will remember, and this is a good thing, I said, I only need three things to get started. There's a low barrier to entry, still is. A strong back, a wheelbarrow, and a shovel. And my parents both supported me that Christmas because I got I already had the strong back and I got a wheelbarrow and a shovel beneath the Christmas tree. And in May of 1991, I started Aquascape Designs at the time as a residential design build firm, building water gardens in Chicago. And I ended up doing my business plan, which was quite crude at the time, was I wanted to build at least three ponds. And I figured if I built three ponds, one per month, the whole summer I was home after my sophomore year at Ohio State University, I would make more money than I did working as a lifeguard the year before. And I ended up doing five ponds, $21,000 in sales in 3 months as a summertime job, and was able to work out of my parents' garage, very little overhead, use a couple guys from the football team. So I cleared 11,000 bucks, which is not a bad summertime gig for a college kid.
No, that's pretty good, man. So where's it gone since then?
Well, you know, the next year, I took 1992, I came back and ended up doing 12 ponds. So I'd done a total of 17 ponds. And then on August 2nd of 1992, my life changed forever because a letter that I had sent the year before, ironically, to the gardening section of the Chicago Tribune got picked up by a freelance writer that created a story for the Chicago Tribune Tempo section that ran in 700,000 Sunday edition newspapers. And all of a sudden, my little summertime gig that I had built 17 ponds from exploded. I had 81, hundreds of phone calls and 81 jobs that I sold. And that really launched my career as basically a full time, taking my hobby and making it into my full time career back in, after that article came out.
And so, that article comes out, this thing explodes. And so now you're the pond guy in the Chicagoland area, building these gorgeous backyard water gardens and things like that. And then eventually it took another turn.
Well, what happened was, after that article came out and I started building a lot of ponds, I became quote unquote the pond guy in Chicagoland, and other landscapers would subcontract me out to build their ponds. And after I had done that a couple of times, some of those same guys asked, "Hey, this looks pretty easy. How about we buy the materials from you to do it, and we'll sell these to our customers?" And at the time, I was using literally garbage cans for my skimmers and Rubbermaid cattle troughs for my waterfalls. And so I thought, I can't sell these guys garbage cans and cattle troughs. So in 1994, I patented my filtration system as the first commercial skimmer filter in the industry, and then actually the first BioFalls, which is a waterfall filter. And I started to manufacture those to sell locally in 1994. And in 1995, after that took off, I thought I could take this business and launch it across the country. And I had actually tried that in 1994. I had graduated from the Ohio State University after 6 years of building ponds for half the year and going to school. And I tried to sell the Columbus branch that I was building ponds in my free time between classes as my first franchise. I spent all of my profits, Tom, from 1993 and 1994 trying to commercialize my idea as a franchise. And I got a landscaper in Columbus to agree to buy it. And it would normally sell, I thought, for $50,000, which was my actual cost to do it. But I was willing to sell it to him for cost on the first one because he was going to be my first franchisee. And as we shook hands on the deal, he did say, "That does include your vehicle, correct?" Which was probably a $20,000 Ford F-150. And I knew right then and there that landscapers don't have $50,000 in their pocket just burning a hole ready to buy a franchise. And so I remember, this is a good lesson, I remember going back to I've always one of the reasons that we connect, I've always had strong coaches in my life and people that I look to for opinions. I went to a guy who was a partner at Arthur Anderson, who was a family friend that had advised me all along with my business. And I said, "I just wasted all my money from 93 and a year of my time, and my entire idea is dead because it's not going to work selling franchises to contractors." And he goes, "He told you the exact same thing that I needed to hear and the last thing anybody wants to hear when you want to kick the dog and complain." And he said, "This will be a good lesson. There will be some wisdom that comes out of this." And of course, he couldn't have been more accurate, because 6 months after that, I took the entire concept of franchising my business and created, in many ways, the first franchise system without a franchise fee, which was the Aquascape mail order business, where I gave away all my secrets and sold them the products if they wanted to follow them. And I created the 20 product, 20 step way of building ponds. all this customized things that I created for my own business that I was going to sell as an exclusive franchise. I just gave it away, all the information for free, and then let people buy my products. And I was the first manufacturer of professional pond equipment, quite literally, in the world. All of the stuff that it had produced up until that date had been for hobbyists. And I was the first, you know, I took my background as a contractor and parlayed it into a unique product, and then rented 26,000 names in April of 1995 from Dun & Bradstreet, a mail order list, mailed out my catalogs. And that year I did $181,000 in mail order business, selling my products to landscapers across the country, and 424,000 of pond builds in Chicago. But the writing was on the wall, because in 1996, I did 1.9 million in mail order sales, then four, then seven, then 16. And eventually we built it up into a top 500 Inc. magazine, fastest growing privately held company. I had 2,221% year-over-year growth in between 1999 and 2000, and ended up selling to 67,000 landscapers all over North America the Aquascape system that I created in my backyard as a kid for a place for turtles all the way back in 1982.
So I'm sitting here thinking, I'm listening, and I know your story. We've known each other so long, and I know your story, but I'm sitting here going, when you began this thing, you came home and you said to your parents, "Hey, I think this is a business." Is this anything close to what you pictured?
Good question. And this is the irony here. I kind of did. Not right away. I mean, of course, when I first said that to my mom, who supported me and then got the gumption up to say it to my dad, I just wanted to build ponds in the summer. But when I started the mail order business in 1995, or actually 1994, when I came up with the concept of the franchise and the mail order, I just – everybody wants a water feature. They just don't know it yet. That was my motto.
Yep.
And I said, look at how many houses are out there. Everyone loves these things. They're so addictive. So I actually said, this is a $50 million business. And I was able to build it up. We ended up being able to hit sales of $58.4 million back in 2007. Now, we can talk about 2008 here in a minute. But so not right away did I realize the potential, but within a few short years, you know, 91 I started, and by 94 I thought it was a $50 million business, and I proved myself right and then some.
So obviously you needed a team to do this. What do you
you know me well. Yeah. I have definite weaknesses.
So, you know, when I put out on social media that I was going to be talking to you, I asked people if they had some questions, and somebody posted a question. They said, how have you been successful building a large team that can take care of your baby? How would you answer that?
Well, that's a complicated question, but obviously one of the huge keys to success. Well, first of all, I've always asked myself this question, Tom, and I've never really heard someone else articulate it this way. And I'm sure other people have. But I always, from very early on, I said, is this the job of a CEO? So that technically that would be my title, chief executive officer. And is this the job of a CEO to be building ponds? No, that's the job of a foreman. Is this the job of a CEO to be selling ponds? No, that's the job of a pond salesman. Mm-hmm. Is this the job of a CEO to be graphically laying out a catalog? No. And so I would find people that could do it almost as good as me, or at least had the energy and passion to learn, and I would put them in this position to succeed. And many times they wouldn't, but the few that did ultimately became lifelong teammates of mine. And here's the real kicker of this: eventually, not only can they do it better than you, they can do it way better than you, but they free you up to do things that you can do differently. So I've been able to build a team by giving people a rope, and they either hang themselves, which often happens, or they make a ladder and climb. And mm-hmm. the people that last at Aquascape, we have 110 teammates today, are all people that to some extent can climb a ladder.
So how do you motivate your people?
Well, one thing is I kind of get out of their way. I guess I could be the ultimate motivator and the ultimate demotivator at Aquascape. When I'm too involved, I can demotivate. When I could kind of set the vision and I can cast the big concepts and let them figure out the details and obviously the execution. That is how I don't micromanage at all. I'm not a control freak, even though I kind of am, because I want it done right.
Be honest. I know you.
But I have people have developed because they found I let them develop their gifts. I mean, you just take my top two longest teammates, Ed and Brian. They couldn't be more polar opposite human beings than one another, but they both do similar things. They build ponds. Ed happens to build typically larger jobs than Brian does, but those guys could finish each other. All three of us could actually finish each other's sentences, but we each work in our way that is our own strengths. And Ed is more big picture. He's the guy that's, working with the product team, and he's working on big and unique projects. Brian is our R&D. He's in the local market. And of course, you know, I'm doing everything that the CEO does, which hopefully is nothing, which is ultimately my end play, is to do nothing but think about the future. And when I've created a team that allows me to do nothing but think about the future, I keep those guys pretty busy with working on things to get us there.
All right. So employee issues are a huge topic, that I deal with every week as I work with my coaching clients and things like that, building a team and this and that. And I had somebody asked a question on Facebook they wanted me to ask you, and I think this is a good one, man. If all your staff left to work for the competition,
yeah,
what would you do first? And what part of the business would you rebuild and why?
Well, I would probably go right back in the field and start building ponds, because it gives you an immense sense of gratification. And it would probably be the only way I would be able to cope with that level of defection, would be able to go put a smile on someone's face every day when you build them a unique work of art, one of a kind custom creation in their yard. The personal satisfaction that comes from that is so powerful, something I completely miss because I don't get to go out in the field with them every day. And I don't know. The second one is, I don't refer to these guys as employees, but my team. Teammates. So I'm, it's kind of like if you talk to any retired football player, we'll just go to that level because that's about our common denominator there.
There you go.
What does Brett Favre miss about playing football? He misses the locker room.
Yep.
He misses the competition with his teammates. I've been dealing with the shitstorm since 2000 and, almost since 2008 when the economy, pulled the rug out from under, people buying ponds and anything that involved spending home equity lines of credit, which is the majority of way people bought things up until then. Now it's not home equity lines of credit because it isn't there. But the people I've forged an incredible relationship with because we're all fighting for the same thing and we're all out there competing. So if I were to lose my team, I wouldn't want to go try to recreate what I've been able to create here at Aquascape, because what makes it so fun to do what I do is the people that I'm fighting with every single day and for, who are ultimately the wholesale customers that I support.
Yeah. So, it'd be a new chapter for you. New season.
I would probably go back to the basics, man. I'd downsize into a house and I'd go out and build ponds in the field and but you know what? That's not going to happen because, right. If you were to go with the hypothetical, I could say instantly, I know I could definitely get my enjoyment off of changing people's lives with putting a pond in their yard.
It's crazy. I've been a contractor for a number of years as well. And, I don't see this joy in other trades. When you guys build a water feature and you turn the waterfall on for the first time, people gather, they cry, they send you letters and throw parties and all this other stuff.
They hand you beers.
And I was a painting contractor. Nobody ever cried watching the paint dry, man. So,
sure.
In fact, on one of your private Facebook pages, your Aquascape, certified Aquascape contractor page, there was a guy the other day who posted something about one of his longtime customers, left him an inheritance.
Yeah, that was – I actually just talked –
It was powerful,
it's Matt, and I just talked to him today because I just needed to talk to him in person, so that was about a week ago. But, yeah, I read that too, and I was just blown away. 24 years, I'm still getting surprised. But, yes, pond customer, she was a widow. She actually sent him after, in her will, so she never talked to him about this ahead of time, but – She said, "You brought such joy in my life, with this pond, that I'm enclosing a check for $20,000 for you to bring happiness into your life now. Now the kind of happiness that you brought into my life. Just talk about chills.
Damn, man, that's cool.
And this guy, I just talked to him today, like I said, and he was emotional, and he said, she made me." Why does he do what he does? Of course, it's to create the art. But if you create the art and no one gets to enjoy it, then are you really enjoying you know, creating the art. And he goes, she was my first customer every season that I would open up her pond so she can enjoy it. And she was the last one. And he goes, I will next year. And he, and this is the kind of guy Matt is. He said, next year will be my first season that I don't have her energy to feed off of.
Mm.
So she actually inspired him to do what he does because of her energy for what he did. And come on, what other profession can you get that in? Not very many.
That's pretty cool. That is awesome. And it, kind of a side note for those of you listening, if you're looking to make a change, start a business, something like that, I would 100% look into the Aquascape system because knowing what I know now, if I could go back in the Wayback Machine, I probably would not have been a painting contractor. I would have built ponds because of a lot of reasons, and that's one of them. So, Greg, what moment in your adult life had the most uncertainty for you?
Oh, I would unequivocally state it was the, you know, in 1 year between 2007 and 2008, our sales dropped $12 million. And you got to realize 2006, 2007 is flat. And then in 2008, the rug got pulled under and we went from double digit growth every year from the time we founded in 91 all the way up through 2006, 2007 was flattened out, and then 2008, $12 million. I mean, so I look at this is something I never had to deal with before, and there's something to be said about. But you know, with that said, you don't know what you're made of until your back's up against the wall. And in my case, and in particular, I didn't know the kind of team. You talk about team here that I'd been able to surround myself with because I really found out who had my back and who didn't. That adversity that we face that, you know, just to fast forward a few years that kind of really, all came together when in, February of 2011, things were looking up. We actually had a growth year between 2009 and 2010. And we were looking another year at 2011 to grow, which didn't happen. And the main reason it didn't happen was in February 11th of 2011, the building, a 250,000 square foot dream that I had had for 15 years as I was renting Aqualand collapsed to the ground under 24 inches of snow. And, for all intents and purposes, Aquascape was dead in the water. We had no, we were out of business. We had no product to get access to. Our building was condemned. We couldn't even talk to our customers because we couldn't get in to access our servers. And, 3 days after the building collapsed, we got a permission to get in and get our servers so that we can actually send out emails and get customer records and call customers and let them know what was happening. 13 days, and this is pretty historic for me, and it was a little bit more symbolic than it was actual. We shipped our first Aquascape product from a warehouse in a different city. I operated in all of 2011 from with an office in one city, a warehouse in another city, and my retail store in a third city. And we moved thousands of pallets over a 10-day period into a rented facility in a different city and shipped our first. Primarily, we weren't fully operational till, you know, a week or so after that, but because I said within 2 weeks we're going to get back up and running, and it wasn't really me that was saying it; it was the team, and it was the people that came together. We lost 5 people the first week within a week of the building collapse that didn't sign. I didn't sign up for this, and everybody else pulled together. Adversity can pull you apart or pull you together, and you know, as simplistic as it sounds, I mean, whether you're a family, whether you're a football team, whether you're a business, and that adversity, that building collapse, took us 11 months to get back home here, rebuild, $13 million insurance claim. That adversity pulled this team together, and ever since then, I have never lost sight of the fact that the people that I'm surrounded around with, being blessed enough to be surrounded with, are the tops in the world in their field, and they got my back. And that to me is, I'm a rich man.
So what advice do you give, the small business owner right now, who's taken a few body blows?
Thank God you're not working on a toll booth. So we choose this pain, right? You want to complain about your marriage? You ask that woman to marry you, or man to marry you. You chose to be an entrepreneur because you didn't want to work for the man and deal with that set of problems. So you're going to have a whole new set of problems that are infinitely greater, but man, the joys are greater too. You know, I'll take a little bit of pain in my marriage for the enjoyment that I have with having a person to do life with and two beautiful kids. I'll take a little bit of, you know, pain dealing with people or with situations, being grateful the fact that I have something to use my mind to fix every day. All businesses, and this is a big one for that I would suggest to entrepreneurs, is that all businesses is fixing problems. Mm-hmm. And if there were no problems to fix, you wouldn't have a business.
Yeah.
Somebody else would. So go ahead and complain about the benefits that you get to wake up every day and put your brain cap on and go to work to fix something, because if not, then go work at a toll booth and you'll be twice as miserable as dealing with whatever problems you have.
That's good advice, man. That's good advice. So looking back on this 24 years of Aquascape and what you've been doing and the ups and downs, would you do anything over, anything differently?
Well, I would do a lot of things differently, but because of course, you know the winning lottery numbers the day after, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know which moves that I made that were wrong. But what I can tell you, I can honestly say, is I've never made a move. I can't ever remember making a move that I didn't make for good reasons. So, you know, obviously there's always pride and ego issues involved, and there's emotional reactions that happen. But I always have had a purpose for what I've done. And I've never done anything to purposely cut off my nose to spite my face, even if it sometimes turns out that way. So of course I would do things over, knowing what the lottery tickets were that I could have played yesterday, but I can go back to the decision, and I'm okay with making a bad decision for good reasons. And I have never had a problem with making decisions. And I do believe that for the most part, I make more good ones than bad ones. And that's why Aquascape is still here 24 years, which is saying something, after it started.
So I know that, you took some blows with, you know, the economy and with the building collapse and hundreds of other things through the years. When you look back on not necessarily the business, but on you, has there been a time that you were maybe dealing with some head trash or a little insecure about who you were or where you were going?
Well, I would have to unequivocally say, the years after 2008. So 2008 was a body blow that took me to my knees. But here's what I'll say with that. And this is where life brings perspective to everything. If you're willing and open to learn it, is my greatest moments of learning came from my greatest challenges. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's unusual for anybody that moves ahead and gets ahead with things, because if I didn't face that adversity that we faced, how would I know that the people that I were surrounded myself with were the best in the world in their field? I wouldn't know that. You know, what are their intentions? People stayed with me with no raises. Mm-hmm. And we forged a relationship through those times. I've heard of venture capital firms that will not, doesn't matter how successful a company is, they will not put their money behind it until they see what the management team has done facing adversity. Mm-hmm. And I could tell you, I had to learn an entire look at everything I touched turned to gold. I mean, how many people could say that they had a business operating for 16, 17 years that had double digit growth every single year through those years?
Right.
And I mean, I just thought, hey, I touched something, it turns to gold. This is how the world works. Well, guess what? You know, I'm not Nostradamus here, and no one could have predicted what would have happened in 2008. But I could tell you one thing. I've learned an entire different skill set. I have an entire different perspective on the world post-2008 than I did before, and even again post-2011 when we had to rebuild literally not just our business model but our entire infrastructure as well, because we were out of our building. So. Mm-hmm. Boy, oh boy, am I appreciative of that. And I think I'm a much wiser CEO today than I ever would have been if it would have just continued to be all gravy.
Yeah. All right. So think back to the 12-year-old digging in the yard in our neighborhood.
Yep.
What would he think of who you've become?
Oh my gosh. That's a very interesting question. Fun. I would say I was having fun when I was 12, and I'm having fun when I'm 45. And if sure as hell I'm not having fun when I'm 65 and 75 and Jerry Nelson 85, then I don't know that – if I can't have fun, then why am I going to do it? You know, life is too short not to have fun. So and it's not all about fun and games. In fact, fun is my fourth company value. It comes – after number one, character. I never want someone working as a teammate here that has to jeopardize their character to do so. Number two, team. Come on, I'm all about team. I played football. I get it. Number three, winning. We have to make money. But, man, four is one of my four company goals. But as a 12-year-old kid, I think the only thing that I would have known about any of that is fun, and I'm still having fun at 45.
You get to dig holes, play in the water, in the dirt, and move rocks. And
On a good day, and yeah. Other days I get to sit in an eight-hour conference room boardroom trying to figure out a strategy to overcome some smaller competitor trying to spin things in a negative way. Like, you know, yeah. When you're on top, people love to throw darts. That's why the Pioneers get all the arrows. Mm.
So, you know, one of the things I always ask everybody is which of the Strongpreneur promises resonates with you the most? And I'm curious what you would say.
Is this like the fun one? I mean, fun's in there, right?
Yeah. Fun's the last one, man. That's it. So you already kind of answered that. So it's
yeah.
Fun.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, right when you were sharing that, I was like, well, I don't need to ask the question anymore, but what the heck. Mm-hmm. So last thing I want to ask you is imagine you're standing in front of, 1,000 entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
And you got 3 to 5 minutes, and that's it. And then they're cutting you off, taking the mic. And what would be your talking points? What would you want them to walk away with about building a business and things like that?
Well, in all honesty, to answer that question, it would be whatever was on the top of my mind at that moment. It's part of living with ADB, you know what I mean? Attention deficit benefit. So I'm a squirrel with a nut, whatever direction go. But for this sake of this conversation, at this moment in time, and what's top of mind for me for whatever particular reason, is the purpose of life is to have a purpose. And if how are you going to be passionate about doing what you're doing if it's not part of your purpose in life? And for me, ponds are a purpose, but so are people. It's why I built a team. It's why I bleed for my customers. It's why I feel the sense of overwhelming satisfaction when I build a pond for a person. So for me, the purpose of life is to have a purpose. My purpose is currently being derived from ponds and the people in the pond industry, the people we serve with the pond industry. And I think, man, this is like the greatest gift to be able to found and discover my purpose kind of just through it. It just came together. I never set out to have a pond business. I just set out to do something that I can make some extra money in the summer that took off. And so today I feel exhilarated living with a purpose, a higher purpose of I'm here to help people, and ponds might be my mechanism to get it there, but I have such an overwhelming sense of satisfaction that comes when I talk to a guy like Matt, who's literally in tears getting a check from a customer that gave him purpose by enjoying what he did for her so much that it fueled his desire to do it for other people. And he's lamenting, how do I go on next year without her energy? But yet she gave him $20,000 to spend it so that he could live the fruits of his labor, which is giving him the gift that he gave her, which was the gift of the pond that he put in. So purpose is the biggest motivator. I think Rick Warren's book, The Purpose-Driven Life, is the number one selling book of all time because people need purpose. Yeah. And I'm seeing an entire industry come together around ponds, and the aquascape can simply just be a platform that they come together and talk about that. But there's so many people that wouldn't be in the pond business if some kid didn't have turtles in Wheaton, Illinois, and had a concrete pond that cracked and leaked and turned green. And today for me to be able to be sitting here, you know, 24 years later, entering our 25th year in business, approaching $750 million in annual sales, and being able to live my purpose and be happily married and have two healthy kids and my health too, I got no problems. And I wish everyone else could feel the same way about their life as I'm feeling blessed about mine.
That's good. I could feel your blood pressure climbing. I love it. Well, dude, I appreciate you hanging out with us today. And I know there's a lot of people all around the world that are listening to this that are going through something. They're either on top, they're on the bottom, they're somewhere in the middle. And I guarantee you that something you said today is resonating out there with people and helping them and adding value to their life. So I appreciate you taking the time to hang out with me.
Well, man. Maybe that's kind of your purpose, right? This is why you're not painting anymore, because you liked people's motors and now you're creating the very life you're helping other people to create. So kudos to you, brother. Thanks, man.
Well, I appreciate it. And I look forward to seeing you, in a few weeks down in Cabo, man.
Yeah. Cabamonium, baby.
That's it. We'll have fun. So,
All right.
So, somebody wants to reach out to you, connect with you, interview you, something like that. How do they reach you? Where do you want them to find
you? You know, honestly, me personally, best way is through Facebook, Greg Wittstock, WITTSTOCK. But, you know, and our company website is aquascapeinc.com, AquascapeInc.com. That's a great way.
Sounds good. I'll put all that in the show notes, and we'll see you next time, man.
Carpe diem.
All right, Strongpreneur Nation, thanks for hanging out today and listening to the chat I had with the Pond Guy. Don't forget to head over to strongpreneurnation.com and take the Strongpreneur Pledge. I promise you, when you do and you live out those promises of a strongpreneur, you will build a stronger life, stronger business. And until next time, we'll see you later. And Travis, bring in those guitars, man.